From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about the Final Fridays, that's final, not first, at the IMA.
I'll be amazed by magician David Rinaldi, who will be appearing in our studio.
Magic. Truly. And I'll get a tour of the National Geographic Photography Exhibit at the Idlejord. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What do we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Beginning January 25th, the Indianapolis Museum of Art will extend their evening hours every final Friday of the month for food, beverages, music curated by DJ Kyle Long, adult tours, adult art making, and new cultural experiences. You'll be able to unwind at the Sunset Bar in the fourth floor Contemporary Art Galleries, then choose from a variety of experiences throughout the IMA galleries. Each month, a new selection of activities, tours, and guest performers will draw from international influences and works of art on display at the museum. Final Fridays will also feature the IMA's Winter Night Film Series at 7 p.m. in the Toby Theater. Sharon Gamble invited Director of Audience Engagement, Preston Batista, to tell us more about this new initiative.
So before we talk about some of the new programs, I want you to tell me what a Director of Audience Engagement does. What's your mission?
Good question. Yeah. So there was a change recently, I think, within the last year and a half, from education to audience engagement. So the name of the department was the education department. So we still do a lot of the work that the education department does, like engaging, you know, K-12 students, higher ed students, our general public. But I think shifting from education to audience engagement suggests a recognition that learning happens very differently in the informal setting of an art museum.
Sure.
So I think that's the gist. So instead of learning in the way that it happens in a classroom with curriculum and syllabi, in the galleries, it's actually the work that we do is actually more about engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So how the work of art informs the experience of our visitors.
Okay. So instead of as an adult visiting apart from I'm not taking an art history class or an art appreciation
right.
class, I'm not, there aren't measurable goals I'm going to come out
exactly.
with. But there are still, I don't know a soul who visits a museum who isn't there at least in part to learn something new or to get exposed to something
right.
new.
Right, but learning happens in many different ways, right?
Right.
So for me, for example, when I go to different art museums, it's to find inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one really important way that we learn from works of art. Like learning that happens in different ways. And in art museums, inspiration would be, for example, one of the ways that visitors might come to sit in a gallery or look at works of art is to draw inspiration. Not that that doesn't happen in classrooms. Of course, that too can happen, but it's less prescribed
sure.
in an art museum. So a visitor can come, for example, with everything that they're experiencing during that day, and it will already affect how a work of art or how their experience at the IMA will go. So in part, we're taking that into consideration. That's why it's more about engagement.
Sure. Now, there are so many systems, dozens of systems for describing different personality types, different cognitive styles, different ways people learn. Is there any particular system that that is kind of the best accepted in the field of audience engagement right now?
Well, I think part of the shift is about including our visitor voices in crafting their experiencing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a more participatory experience. So everything, for example, from efforts towards formative evaluation. so we understand from the get-go how an exhibition or how our visitors will respond to exhibitions, even granularly to the title of an exhibition, to the way labels are written. So that participatory experience all the way to programs that we do now, such as art making every Saturday and Sunday for families. So the whole range of creating experiences where visitors can, in fact, craft that on their own, mm-hmm. In some ways make it self-guided, but decide what they want to do in a cultural institution like the IMA. That's actually, I think, the way that the trend, at least in many museums, so that, this has been happening for a while now with natural history museums, mm-hmm. and the children's museums, but in art museums, it's coming a little bit later, but in my opinion, never too late. So we're incorporating a lot of those ideas into how we move forward with
sure.
exhibitions and programs.
Kind of the ultimate outcome, it strikes me, is having your audiences be closer to partners with you, as far as, you know, there was a time when art museums in particular they're the experts. We will decide what culture to expose our communities
right.
to.
Absolutely.
But we live in a much more egalitarian time
well,
and place
right.
now.
And it's about shifting that voice of authority, right?
Yeah.
And clearly respecting that the expertise still belongs to the museums
sure.
and, you know, to the curators and educators who works in art museums, right? So that's still, an important basis for the work that we do. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's important that visitor voices are incorporated into that. It's a way for us to make exhibitions, works of art, the lives of artists relevant to our visitors. So that they can associate, you know, galleries, their experience at the IMA with their own life. So that I think that's an important part of their experience.
So it's not isolated. It's not compartmentalized. It's
Absolutely.
Just something you do when your family comes to town at
well,
Christmas
and
that's, or whatever.
Right. And then that's an important factor in learning, I think.
Sure.
If you can tie it in with your own experiences. So.
Yeah. And you really have a wealth of resources on your campus. I mean, you certainly
Absolutely.
Have a beautiful building full of amazing art, but you have an auditorium that is fitted with great equipment to show films, that has great acoustics
right.
for concerts. You've got the 100 acres. You've got the rest of the grounds. You've
right.
got the greenhouse. You've got the horticultural program there.
A wealth of resources.
Right,
yes, absolutely.
Right. How did the idea for Final Fridays come about?
Well, let's see. Well,
can you tell us?
Well, I can. I mean, I'll admit that it's not new to art museums, right?
Sure.
Other places like Brooklyn, for example. You know, I used to do this in Baltimore, too. And in many ways, it's also to say that the art museum, you don't always have to be quiet when you come to an art museum.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, most of the times you shouldn't be quiet. You should actually be having conversations and dialogue, especially if you're with a group or with your friends and family. But I saw the IMA as the potential for the IMA to become an important cultural hub for Indianapolis. And being new here, I see that we can contribute to what already seems to me a really vibrant cultural landscape, right? So, but Final Fridays, I'm hoping, will not only bring people who are familiar to the IMA, so a lot of our core members, so we're offering very specific member components
mm-hmm.
To these programs, to these evenings, but I also wanted us to be able to diversify our audience. So a lot of people who are not familiar to the IMA will see that, yeah, in fact, there are, like I said, an incredible wealth of resources that they can experience and enjoy. So, and that's in partnering with Kyle Long, for example, so that we bring in, you know, this very diverse musical offerings that we would be able to attract you know, different audiences from all over the city and hopefully from beyond.
Mm-hmm. It also offers a nice alternative for an outing, so a nice date night.
Well, absolutely. And you know, the name Final Friday is clearly a foil to First Fridays,
yeah.
Right? So I didn't want to compete with First Fridays.
No.
I know that's a really important night out for people who live in the city. And I think Final Fridays will sort of add to, you know, whatever else there is to do already in Indianapolis. You know, in addition to the music that Kyle Long will be curating for the next several months, we're also offering tours that will sort of look at our works of art very differently. So
how so?
Well, we're calling them slightly naughty. You know, they're evening tours,
okay.
Right? So topics like voyeurism, for example, the male nude. So, you know, not your typical weekend tours that we offer at the IMA. And also, although it, clearly this extends from 6 to 11, right, p.m., so we're hoping that throughout the evening there will be a different range of audiences from our members to families all the way to people looking for a great night out. Art making activities will be part of this, but you know, there'll be a cash bar and food as well, so it can be a great you know, evening socializing with friends,
breaking down those walls.
Absolutely, yeah. So you know, trying to offer our visitors ways to experience the galleries anew.
As we're having this conversation, you're sort of on the eve of your one-year anniversary in Indianapolis, and congratulations,
thank
first
you.
Of all. And you've lived in some quite different sorts of cities, Los Angeles and Baltimore. What would you say, having been here just a little while, are the strengths of this community?
Well, from my point of view, potential is kind of the word that comes to my mind. I moved from the Philippines to San Francisco in 1980. And, you know, in some ways, there's a way that Indianapolis is very similar to San Francisco in the 80s before it boomed and grew and became overdeveloped.
Before
right?
It became exactly what everybody thought of when you said San Francisco just
right,
now.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So, and, you know, when I first interviewed for my position here and then eventually moved, I saw that there was a lot of ways that I and the IMA could contribute to Indianapolis. And really, that's how I see it, that just there's enormous potential for cultural growth. So, very exciting to me.
Sharon Gamble with the IMA's Director of Audience Engagement, Preston Batista. Learn more about Final Fridays, which begin January 25th at imamuseum.org. Again, imamuseum.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The third annual Winter Magic Festival, presented by Indie Fringe in association with Taylor Martin's Indie Magic Monthly, is going to be taking place at a new venue this year at the Indiana Landmark Center on Central Avenue from January 18th through the 20th. Five incredible acts, Indiana-based as well as from Pennsylvania and Kentucky, will be performing multiple shows. To get in the proper mood for the festival, Travis DiNicola invited magician David Rinaldi, who is assisting with the festival, into our studios to find out more and maybe create a little magic.
David, welcome to Art of Matter. Thanks for appearing in our studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've been looking forward to this very much, especially doing a magic trick on the air with you. We're going to get to that in just a minute, but
sure.
I want to learn a little bit more about you. I know you just moved here recently from Chicago. That's where you grew up, is that right?
Yes, I grew up in Chicago, and I started performing at age 14 in restaurants in Chicago. And then
that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
you know, age 14. I mean, that's kind of young.
Yeah,
to get
it was
started.
It was a good age to start because I really made all my mistakes. Most of them, most of the ones that you make being a young performer then, which was a good experience. I got a lot more experience, you know, meeting people and mm-hmm. everything, and learning to interact with them. So that was really fun.
What got you into it? I mean, you went to a magic show and just loved it? Or?
Yeah, I went to go see David Copperfield when I was 13. And my cousin and I had been practicing magic tricks all the way up until the show. And then after the show, my grandmother wanted to wait till all the crowds were gone, so we just waited, and everybody was literally gone. And then David Copperfield came to the stage, and we were the only ones in there. They probably didn't even see us. And him and I, you know, ran down to the stage while he was doing his meet and greet, and snuck into the meet and greet, and got to shake his hand and everything.
Nice.
And it was just, it was very, very cool.
That's very cool. Have you had a chance to see him again or meet him since then?
I saw him again, and it was equally as great, especially because my dad got to go on stage and help him with
one of
the tricks. So it was pretty funny. And but I didn't get to meet him again, so hopefully one day.
You know, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I've talked to a lot of magicians, and for so many of them, it was that experience of being at a live show, you know, when they were a kid. I mean, I remember, I think I was about maybe 9 years old when I got to see Doug Henning and got called up on stage.
You got to go on stage
with Doug
Henning.
Yeah, I got to go on stage with Doug Henning when I was like 9.
That's incredible.
And it was amazing, you know, and I mean, I was already, you know, a fan of magic, as a lot of kids are, but, you know, you just fall in love with it, then you start wanting to practice and do it and all that, and obviously, but you turned in a career at 14. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, it was mostly restaurants, and then whatever parties kind of came from that. And then I got a little bit older and started thinking about, you know, what I wanted to do, if I really wanted to try to make magic a career. And after high school, I got into I didn't go for it. I just went into heating and air conditioning, and I was doing that. And I was like, you know what, this is not going to be fulfilling in the long term. I gotta go for the
magic.
I
mean, nothing's wrong with heating and air conditioning.
Oh, no,
it's a little
really
bit, you know, I mean, unless you're trying to do an escape act from like an air duct or something.
Yeah, or all the gases involved in it. But I was like, okay, this is not fulfilling in any way, shape, or form. I should go for my magic because it's what I've been doing for so long. I know if I don't try for it. So I got into college because I wanted to learn more about marketing, and I studied public relations and at Southern Illinois University. So I lived there, and Carbondale was just kind of my playground for learning, you know, learning to approach more restaurants and nightclubs, because I was finally 21. I could go there, and I had an incredible experience there. People still ask for me at one of the restaurants that I used to work at there. So
nice.
So I miss it there. Southern Illinois is a beautiful place.
So you have fans. You have a lot of fans there. And so what is it for you? Let me ask you this. I mean, there's so many different aspects to, you know, different magicians' routines. And some really love the performance aspect. Some the storytelling, or, you know, the writing of it even. Some are really into just the physical mechanics of the tricks. Some are into the sleight of hand. I mean, what for you really draws you in? Or how do you describe your own show, maybe, is a better way?
I guess it's more so, I like to think of it more so as just kind of like a party with a stage and there's a guy doing magic tricks. I like the social aspect of it. And because I think the internet is one of the greatest tools that's ever been invented since, like, the knife, you know? And so, you know, now we have, as human beings, we're able to connect with so many different people, and it's nice to be able to combine the social in person and the social over the internet. I could still talk to other people that I performed for a long time ago. And I just like getting together with people, whether it be doing a stage show where it's a fun atmosphere that way, or doing close-up magic where I get to personally interact with people.
Sure.
And
it's the real physical
amazement.
Presence.
You know, I get to see their pupils, you know, dilate when something amazing happens. So.
How about you? For what do you like to go see in magic yourself? I mean, are you is there like a type of magic that you don't necessarily do, but like love it when you see someone else do a great dove act or something?
I like seeing the type of magic that is sort of symbolic in real life aspects. There's one of my friends out on the West Coast. He does a magic act with a painting, an abstract painting, and he removes certain portions of the painting. Like one of them is kind of like a circle, and it turns into a ball in real life. And he changes it into like a pink ball and puts it back onto the painting.
Okay.
And then and by the end, his glasses vanish onto the painting, and it's an abstract painting of him. I like these.
Oh, wow, that's
these
pretty
sort
cool.
Of, things that kind of relate to real life in a sense, and brought.
Real life objects.
Yeah, real life objects. I love that sort of thing. And then I also like magic that involves just our minds, because we can get. I studied a lot of philosophy in college, and just the idea of us being able to trick ourselves. I love magic where you think you're moving along the right path, and then, you know, it hits you and you're thrown way off, you know. So I love that part of it.
Excellent. Too, so. Cool. Well, is it time for a trick?
I can do a trick. Okay. I don't know if I like the spontaneity of it. I don't know if this is going to work, because what happened was is I...
Look, magic on radio is hard no matter what.
It's hard but... no matter what, but also because I made this hard on myself purposely. I took a deck of cards and I threw it down on the ground, and a lot of cards turned over and everything.
Okay.
And I turned over all of the cards except for one. I couldn't even see what the card was, and I put them all back together.
Okay.
And I put them inside the box, and then I shipped it to you.
And that's what you mailed to me.
And that's what I mailed to you. I mailed to you a deck of cards now.
Okay, so I've got an envelope here, and this was postmarked December 21st,
mm-hmm.
and I have not opened
you
this yet.
You have not opened it. Now,
I have not opened
you're also
this yet.
Thinking of a playing card.
Okay.
What you can go ahead and say that card right now. What
I can think
card?
Of, and I'm thinking of a card.
Yeah, you were thinking of a card. What was that card?
Was
the one that you yeah you
that
wrote,
I wrote
it down,
down
yeah, you wrote it down
that would have been a six of spades.
Six of spades. Mm-hmm. Okay, so okay. Go ahead and open up that. Okay.
So you'd asked me to think of a card earlier before
card
we went
earlier.
On the air. So now I'm opening this up.
Okay, and there's a little note in there. Read that note out.
Okay, so there's a deck of cards in here, and this is a little first class mailer, first class all the
I
way.
Went,
of course. I appreciate
I spent no
that.
Expense.
I appreciate
I even
that.
Got a tracking number on it too.
And the note here typed up says, "Dear Travis, thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm praying this actually worked. If it did, let's go nuts. David Rinaldi." Okay. Now I've got a bicycle deck here, a blue standard bicycle deck.
Yeah, go ahead and open up the little flap.
Okay.
And take out the cards and see how the cards are face up. Keep them all face up.
Okay.
And spread them out onto the table in front of you.
Okay. So I'm spreading the cards out on the table,
and
the radio station table in front of me.
Confirm for everybody that they're all face up.
They are all face up except for one card.
There is the one card. There's no other cards face up.
There are no other cards face up, and I'm looking at...
And you said you were thinking of the six of spades?
I was.
Okay. Go ahead and turn that over. Let's see if it worked.
And... Oh, and the card is the six of spades.
Good.
Nicely done, David.
I'm glad that worked.
Congratulations.
Thank
I'm glad
you.
It worked, too. That was awesome. That's very cool. Yeah, right before we went on, you pulled out a deck of cards, and you shuffled through them and had me stop you, and the card that I stopped John, we pulled out, and that was...
I didn't look at it, though.
You did not look
you.
At it. You
I
did
had
not look
write
at
it. Down
you
so
did
that,
not look at it. That's
yeah.
correct. I looked at it, and that was a six of spades, and here we are, six of spades again.
Awesome.
Well done. That's excellent. Thank you, man.
No problem.
Very fun. So, I mean, obviously, a lot of people in Indy love magic. Taylor Martin has done a great job over the number of years in putting together lots of great magic shows, the Indy Monthly Magic that takes place at Theater on the Square. Taylor, of course, has also brought a lot of great magicians, including himself, to Indy Fringe. And through Indy Fringe, for the past couple years, he's been creating the Winter Magic Festival. And so we're up to the 2013 third annual Winter Magic Festival. I love this weekend because it's a great way to see a whole bunch of shows. And I've talked about this before, but this year what's exciting is it's taking place at Indiana Landmarks, beautiful theater. So that should be a lot of fun. In the past had been at the Indy Fringe Theater, but this year, bigger stage at Indiana Landmarks. And we've got a magical lunch for kids, as well as five different acts that are sort of rotating in repertoire throughout the weekend. Give me, because I know you're helping out, helping Taylor put this show together. Give me a little overview of what we get to see for the Winter Magic Fest.
You get to see some really incredible stuff. Eric Starkey out of Pittsburgh, he's got a great show, and he's got a little motif with superheroes. His show's called Superheroes and Card Tricks. And he's a really, really nice guy and very down-to-earth, great guy. The Young Champions of Magic, they're another one that you may want to see. There are a lot of young guys, three of them. And Reuben Moreland
mm-hmm.
was actually in the documentary from last year called Make Believe. You can actually see it on Netflix.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I've heard about that. Excellent.
Yeah, and that was a really good documentary as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Magically Ever After, it's a new show. Devin J. Stewart, he's been in other Indie Magic Monthlies,
mm-hmm.
And this one, along with Jennifer, they made a storybook of magic show. So I'm very excited to see how that one's
cool.
going to come out.
Yeah, I'm very interested with that. Jennifer Cavanaugh, always nice to see a woman magician
mm-hmm.
in the mix
yeah,
here.
No,
and,
exactly. Yeah, she's not just an assistant. She's actually really involved in it. And I like that aspect to it. I like when they're not just a prop in the show.
Exactly.
You know, she's a force within the show.
Excellent.
And then there's the Action Brothers out of Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, I've seen those guys before. They've been here in the past for one of the Winter Magic Festivals. A lot of fun.
Oh, were they? Yeah. I've actually never seen them. I'm excited to see them. And then
and their lovely assistant, Misdirection. Which kind of like, I mean, that's their whole show is just filled with lots of bad puns and fun stuff. But
I love they're good guys. I love a bad pun. And then Anthony the Great out of Richmond, Indiana. He is billed as with the golden era of stage magic, so it's going to be a little vaudevillian sort of.
Nice, I love that type of stuff. Yeah. And this is great. They lots of different magic, all very, very family friendly. In fact, I know that there's a family pass, $35 for two adults, two kids under 12, which is a great way to see a show. There's also a fiver pass where you can see all five shows, and all that information, of course, you can get at the indiefringe.org website. But and then the magical luncheon is on the Saturday the 19th, and that's from 11:15 to 12:15. And again, these are great events, especially for for kids that love magic and want to see some great magicians. Great weekend for the family,
even adult kids
and adult kids as well. Yeah, I mean, I'm going, absolutely.
Yeah, so, awesome, of course.
Yeah, but
yeah, and then there's also the NBA Magic Monthly in February.
Yes, tell me about that. Right,
February 5th. Mm-hmm. It's going to be me, Taylor, who runs it. Taylor, mm-hmm. Like you said, Taylor has been a great force within Indiana and Indianapolis for getting more magic and everything. I think, and his wife Deborah is a mm-hmm. lovely woman.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what's the date on that for the next?
It's February 5th, and then also there's going to be the Amazing Barry and Corbett Troyer as well.
Cool. Okay, so, and again, that's at Theater on the Square, and mm-hmm. that is on what is that? Is that a Wednesday?
It's a Tuesday.
Tuesday. It's the first Tuesday.
Yes. If you go, make sure you say hi to me because I'd love to meet you.
Excellent. Good, yeah. David. That'll be really fun. So hey, what before I let you go, what brought you down here to Indianapolis from Chicago?
I told you I lived in Carbondale and then I mm-hmm. also lived in Chicago. And I was totally taken out of my safety zone when I went down to Southern Illinois. But I loved it. I fell in love with the small town mm-hmm. feel. And Indianapolis is just a great mix. You know, it's 3 hours from Chicago and it's just a great city. There's so many new things to explore. And I think it's a great city. I've heard people who live here say, oh, there's not that much to do. I'm like, there's an incredible amount of stuff to do.
Absolutely.
Here. Really, I think it is just a fantastic city. So
good
I'm
city
really
for magic?
Yeah, and it's a great city for magic. It's not, Taylor's done a great job building it up for magicians, and I think it's just going to keep going from there.
Cool. Well, hey, I look forward to seeing you at the Winterfest and then also at any monthly magic show coming up on the 5th again at Theater on the Square. And it's been a real pleasure. Thanks a lot for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Travis DiNicola with magician David Ranalli. The third annual Winter Magic Festival takes place from January 18th through the 20th at the Indiana Landmark Center on Central Avenue. The complete schedule for the festival is available on the IndieFringe.org site. That's IndieFringe.org. You can get more information about magician David Ranalli at his website, DavidRanalli, RANALLI.com, DavidRanalli.com, or at IndieMagician.com, IndieMagician.com. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Have you broken any New Year's resolutions yet?
You know what? No, I'm not sure that that's a fair question. I think.
Oh,
that...
dear. You're taking it very seriously. I'm so sorry.
Well, you can't just like do it all on the first day or even the first week. You need to give yourself a little time to ease into this.
You mean like my acquaintance who said her resolution was to not make resolutions until March 1st?
Oh, I like that. See, that's not bad. Yeah.
I'm going to ease
into it. Yeah, I'm still working on my schedule for how I bring integrate those resolutions into my life.
Well, I'm sure that one of the things you're going to do to reward yourself is attend some arts events.
Ah, yes, of course.
Which is why we have that calendar thing we call
What Do We Do? How about you? What are you doing these days, Sharon?
Well, I haven't started my tango lessons yet. But here's something groovy coming up on Sunday afternoon, the 13th at 4 o'clock. It is a scholarship benefit concert for the Indianapolis Suzuki Academy. It's at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Indianapolis, which is kind of in the shadow of Butler's campus at 615 West 43rd Street. Michael Isaac Strauss is returning to Indy for a special appearance, joined by pianist R. Kent Cook, oboist Roger Rowe, violinist Davis Brooks, and cellist Kurt Fowler, all of them donating their talents for the event. The focus of the repertoire is English works from the early 20th century. And again, it's a benefit concert for the Indianapolis Suzuki Academy to get instruments and lessons in the hands of worthy young people. You can get admission tickets at the door. That's Sunday at 4 at UUI, 615 West 43rd.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Very, very nice. Hey, another very cool event for a cool cause is Super Bowls. That's S-O-U-P-E-R. Super, that's right. I know. Everyone's, yeah. It was just a year ago we had the Super Bowl here, that other one. Well, this is Super Bowls 2013, and it's an event for Second Helpings. It's a soup and art event, in fact, on Saturday, January 26, 2013. And last year's event was such a hit that they're doing it again. They had about 500 people turn out for this opportunity to purchase handmade ceramic bowls and get soups to go and vote for your favorite soup by local chefs. And it all is a fundraiser for Second Helpings and the work they do with food rescue and job training and feeding hungry people. So this takes place on Saturday, January 26th, starting at 11:30 a.m. It goes until 2 p.m., so it's great for lunch. You want to get there early. Handmade ceramic bowls will be available for purchase, created and designed by a whole bunch of local artists, including Corey Jefferson, Get Dirty Ceramics, Caitlin Fox, and many more. It's all at Second Helpings main building, the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Center down on Southeastern Avenue. You can get tickets at the door, or you can buy them there. $5 gets you 5 soup tastings. You can get additional soup tastings for more money. And some of the soups are going to be from, let's see, Greg Hardesty from Recess, and DeWitt Jackson, who cooks for the Colts, and Kathy Jones from Iozo's, and Anna Sintesi from Saffron Cafe. And let's see, who else they have? Northside Social, Circle City Soup, Chef's Academy.
You're making
me hungry. McNiven's, Pogue's Run Grocery, Bardo's Catering. So anyways, it's going to be a ton of fun. And then, of course, you can buy those bowls afterwards. So Second Helpings Super Bowl, again, January 26th, 11:30 a.m.
Fantastic. Speaking of food, Travis, I have a little pop quiz for you.
Okay. Oh, I like pop and quizzes too.
How many corn plants per person per day does it take to support the American way of life?
Goodness. Well, let's see. We eat corn. We use it to fuel our cars. It's in our clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess 10 corn plants per person.
25 corn
Goodness.
Plants per person per day.
Per day.
So think of that.
That's
the
a
next
lot of
time
corn.
You go across Indiana and see all the cornfields.
Wow.
You will learn so much more at a fascinating exhibition that is up for a couple more months through March 24th at the Indiana State Museum. It's called, yes, they couldn't resist the puns, Amazing Maize, the Science, History, and Culture of Corn. And you will be amazed at the scientific, economic, and cultural significance and effect of corn on daily life, past and present. Corn has been occasionally called the most productive domesticated plant and the greatest plant breeding achievement of all time. And you'll hear evidence about that and see evidence about
That's
that. And
really wild.
It's family friendly, and take your kids and go to see Amazing Maize at the Indiana State Museum.
Very cool. Well, I've learned
Who
something
knew?
Right there. Hey, definitely a great concert series worth checking out is the Indie Acoustic Cafe series, and it continues on. You can get lots of information at their website, IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com. But heads up that on January 19th, they're going to have both Ari Hest and Griffin House here together for one really great show. If you're a fan of great acoustic music, then this is worth checking out. Let's see, this concert is going to be at the Wheeler Community Arts Theater in Fountain Square. They do move their concerts around a little bit, so it's always good to check their website, IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com. Doors open at 6:30 for that show, and then the show begins at 7:30 on January 19th for Ari Hest and Griffin House.
If you have children who like to play with their food, I seem to be on a food theme today. Don't worry, I have non-food related items. But at Whole Foods Market in Carmel, that's the one at Clay Terrace, next Saturday, that's the 19th from 11 to noon, you can take your kids, you need to RSVP for this, so listen, I'll have the phone number in a second, but you can take your kids to make food jewelry at Whole Foods Market.
Fun!
You can make necklaces, bracelets, anklets, rings, and more from pastas, cereals, and, well, anything you can think of. Supplies are provided. You're limited only by your creativity and, you ready for this, what you can put on your string. Okay, I'm okay. Just saying. We're encouraging kids to play with their food. And, of course, while you're there, you're probably going to do a little bit of shopping for some nice, fresh food. All ages are welcome. So, Travis, if you would care to make, a bracelet for your lovely bride, you're welcome to do so. But they are asking for RSVPs so they can have the right amount of materials on hand at 317-569-1517. Making Food Jewelry at Whole Foods Market in Carmel, 317-569-1517. It is free. Just give them a call. You're staring at me like,
I'm, believe me, it sounds like a great way to spend some interesting time.
It does indeed.
You know, if one of your resolutions is to listen to more great music live, then I think I just want to encourage you to go check out either the Chatterbox or the Jazz Kitchen.
Absolutely.
Because both have music pretty much almost every night. Chatterbox has live jazz every night of the week. Jazz Kitchen has live jazz every night, but Sunday nights, except mm-hmm. for special events. And both the proprietors of those two great establishments, David Ali at the Jazz Kitchen and David Anarchik at the Chatterbox, were both recently awarded or were inducted into the Indianapolis Jazz Hall of Fame for the great work that they do. So congratulations to both those guys for that. But just a heads up, you know, check out Jazz Kitchen. If you haven't been there in a while, great food. And, just coming up in the next couple weeks, next Monday night, Sophie Fodd, incredibly talented young saxophone player. Next weekend at the Jazz Kitchen on the 19th, Brenda Williams, who's always a ton of fun to hear. They're doing a special MLK tribute on January 21st. Bill Langton will be there on the 26th. Their whole schedule's online, of course, when you go to jazzkitchen.com to check that out. But great music, great jazz, almost every night of the week in Indianapolis at both Jazz Kitchen and Chatterbox. Worth checking out.
Absolutely. We'll see you there. I know you and I both go to those places. Mm-hmm. And love to hear live jazz. Say, if you have an online shop, maybe you have an Etsy shop or you have a small business and you've struggled with how to get good product photography angles, good product shots, there is a workshop coming up on Saturday, January 26th from 1 to 4 at Homespun in Irvington. It's called Easy Product Photography for Beginners. It's taught by a woman who calls herself the Lebanese Martha Stewart.
Oh, fun.
Raina Salome Streitinger of Raina Salome Designs. And she is going to help you understand how to make the right background, how to do your lighting correctly, how to make your food products look yummy, how to make your jewelry look like somebody can't live without it. Well, that might be overselling it just a little bit. But you can go to the Homespun website and find out more about that. And I've not seen anyone doing this recently in Indy, so take advantage of that. Easy Product Photography for Beginners at Homespun, Saturday, January 26th. You want to pre-register. Workshop fee, $50. But you're going to get all kinds of great information out of that.
That sounds great. Yeah, mm-hmm. In fact, that's a great thing. They have so many great classes and workshops out at Homespun. Always worth checking out. Well, Sharon, that is the time that we have this week for Art of the Matter for our calendar. Yes. So are you ready to say what we'll be back next week to have more on? I'm messing all this up, but you know what we say. You ready?
I'm ready.
Ready?
What'll we do? We'll see you next week.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Through February 10th, the Idle Jorg Museum is hosting National Geographic Greatest Photographs of the American West and features images published by National Geographic over its 125-year history. The exhibition features works by nearly 80 different photographers, including Ansel Adams, Edward S. Curis, Annie Griffiths, and others. Sharon Gamble invited curator Johanna Bloom to our studios to learn more.
So this seems like such a natural fit. Great photographs of the West and the Idle Jorg Museum. How did this exhibition first come into awareness at the Idle Jorg?
Well, the exhibit was actually put together by the National Museum of Wildlife Art in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, in partnership with the National Geographic Society. And the Eitelsjorg and the Wildlife Museum are both members of the Museums West Consortium, which is a group of museums that are like-minded, have similar missions, similar collections. And what's really interesting about this exhibit is that while it's the brainchild of the Wildlife Museum and the National Geographic Society, it's showing concurrently at all 10 museums that are members of the Museums West Consortium. So our role in that group kind of brought the exhibit to us.
Okay. So what are the advantages of having, and because it's not paintings, because it's photographs, you can make multiple prints and mm-hmm. you can have a concurrent show. That doesn't happen very often. Normally an exhibition travels.
No, that's right. Yeah, normally they'll travel from site to site over a protracted period of time.
Sure.
But what's really great about this is we can have a national advertising campaign, you know, if you're seeing it in Indianapolis, you might have family, you know, in Wyoming or something, and
sure.
they can go see it somewhere else. You know, it's just a great way to kind of show these beautiful photographs in a really big way.
Yeah. Yeah. It strikes me it might also have, and I know this isn't your responsibility at the museum, but it might also generate some online conversations
mm-hmm.
among
yes.
people who have seen it at, you know, quite disparate places.
Exactly. There's a really beautiful website that accompanies the exhibit that definitely allows for that.
So these are all photos that have appeared in print in the magazine, right? Or not?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is there any theme in the subject matter? Is it mostly nature? Is it mostly animals? Is it, I mean, the wildlife connection there?
Mm-hmm.
Tells me there might be a lot of critters.
There are a fair number of wildlife images, but it's a really wide range of topics and subjects from the West. In fact, it's organized into four separate themes. The first is legends, then encounters, boundaries, and visions. And so there are things that you might expect to see when you're thinking about the American West and National Geographic, like wildlife, like beautiful landscapes, that sort of thing. But there's some really surprising views of the West as well, particularly in those back to topics, boundaries, and visions, where you're seeing very contemporary views of the West, of cities, of technology in the West, you know, the new frontiers of technology that are being developed in the West. It's really quite exciting, I think.
Now, I want to hear more about these unusual views, but backing up to a more basic question, how is the West defined for purposes
Ooh.
Of this exhibition?
Well, I would say it's a pretty broad view of the West. As far as geographic boundaries go, it's primarily, I'd say, the Trans-Mississippi West, so, you know, west of the Mississippi
okay.
River, which is, I think, generally what people think of.
Sure.
And it is, it's, I think, restricted to North America. I believe there are a couple of shots from Canada,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's anything from Central America.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the area that we're talking about. But then within subject matter, it's very broad. It's not just cowboys and Indians, you know, there's...
Or just the unspoiled lands in national
yeah,
parks. Because
exactly.
lots of times you hear West and that's what you think of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not all there is in
no.
that half of the country.
It's sort of
a long stretch.
A very static image that people kind of have of the West that sometimes can be very frozen in the past. And what's beautiful about this exhibit for me, especially being somebody who's from the West, is that it shows the living, breathing West as it is today and as it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the full spectrum.
So tell me about the context and the labels, because National Geographic, of course, the magazine that so many of us grew up with, is famous for the photos, but you don't just look at the photos, you read the deeply researched text that accompanies. So how does that translate to taking those photos out of context?
Well, it's not a very text-heavy exhibit, actually. I mean, it really rests on the photographs, and they largely speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That said, that there is text, of course, in the exhibit. There are introductory panels that kind of explain those themes I mentioned earlier. And kind of give some context for why certain photos are grouped together and what they sort of say as a whole, as opposed to just individual images. But then there's a little bit of explanation about what's happening in each photograph as well on an individual label. So.
Say more about what photos might be saying as a group. Give me an example of that.
For example, the section called Visions, which is the last part of the exhibit before you exit, those photos together sort of present ideas about what the future might hold for the West. And so that's where you're going to see some of these very technology-based shots. There's this great one that's one of my favorites of an observatory in New Mexico where they're using different kinds of lasers to create an artificial star in the sky.
Oh, wow.
It's just... I mean, who would have thought?
Whoa.
I mean, it's just really, really cool.
Cool and crazy.
Yeah, and you know, the wind technology and solar technology. But at the same time, also in that section, you might see some views of some of the environmental degradation in the West. So there's forest fires. There's the incredible water use of places like Phoenix, you know, in the desert Southwest. And yet everybody has a pool, you know, it's just there's this photograph where you see a suburb outside of Phoenix and everything's green and lush and these bright blue pools. And then there's this stark line and it's desert on the other side. And it's just, I don't know, it's just such a wild shot because on the one hand, it speaks for how much we've, you know, evolved and the way technology has evolved to sustain that kind of life, but then is it really sustainable? So
that's so interesting because we, even unintentionally, it strikes me that some political questions are going to come up from the context of this exhibit.
Absolutely.
And lots of times I think we tend to think of, you know, the eastern half of the country is cities and urban and, you know, all, and this is, of course, is not true. All you have to do is drive an hour any direction from Indianapolis and corn, look, soybeans, look. But I think sometimes we think the great West, especially the Northwest, is the great unspoiled part of the country. We oversimplify and of course, that's not true at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
What, as we're having this conversation, the exhibition's been open for a few months. Has the turnout been who you've expected? Do you take us behind the scenes? Do you project a particular kind of audience when you bring in any given exhibition or mount your own exhibition for that matter? And have there been any surprises?
Well, I mean, absolutely. Whenever we're putting on an exhibition, whether it's something that's been produced by another institution or if it's something we're creating in-house, we absolutely think about audience and who we might be able to attract with certain exhibitions and who we might be able to attract that we haven't in the past. And the thing with this exhibit in particular, A, it's photography. And photography, we found, is very popular. People really like photography. I think it's accessible. It's exciting. It shows things that people may not get to see in their everyday lives, but, you know, kind of gives a sense of some of the romance, but also some of the reality.
And maybe even people think they can relate because they probably have a camera.
Exactly. Most people,
whether they can be
today,
a great photographer or not is another issue. But
and especially today with the way technology has evolved, you know, anyone who has a cell phone really
has a
camera.
Yeah, every digital device
now
has a camera, right?
So I think there's something really accessible and easily engaging about photography.
Sure.
But the other thing that's going on with this exhibit right now is that we also have Jingle Rails, which is
right,
our big holiday train extravaganza. And the two have partnered so well together because they're both showing the West. You know, in Jingle Rails, you've got these beautiful, intricate scenes of national parks, and then you've got the photographs just down the hall in the National Geographic exhibit. So we've been fortunate that with the popularity of Jingle Rails, you know, people are coming to the museum maybe to see that, but then they take the whole day and they go through National Geographic and they find something there that they like as well.
So maybe more exposure to children and families with kids of different ages.
Absolutely.
And because we live in a time when everybody flies everywhere, almost no families with young children have had the experience of driving across any
country,
part of the West.
Yeah. Cross-country road trip.
Yeah. So the idea of imagining yourself down to that, what is it, a G-gauge train and being in there and going through the scenery, and then you get to actually go see photos of what it might look like.
Yeah.
What kind of programming do you have supporting this exhibition?
Well, we've been partnering with Robert's Camera to put on some programs. They've been doing some photo walks, I know.
What's that?
They've been doing photo walks around the museum and around the canal area. And so people sign up for that and they go with, I believe, somebody from the Roberts staff.
Okay.
And they just kind of go around and take photos as they walk and talk about, you know, what makes good photography.
Oh,
sort
cool.
Of thing. And then we're also having a camera giveaway. We've got two different ways that you can win a camera. One is just entering through the museum store, but the other is to submit some of your own photography of the West. And there's a panel that will be selecting the best photographs.
And I'm guessing John Van Osdell can't enter because
yeah, no,
all those photos from his
enter.
Creative Renewal Fellowship a few years ago. Sorry, John, you're not eligible.
He did win one from the staff contest, though.
Excellent. So you've lived a number of places in the country. Are you from South Dakota originally, or is that...
Originally, I'm from Washington, D.C. That's where I was born and lived until I was 12. But then we moved to Rapid City, South Dakota.
Okay, so you have an internalized sense of what the West looks like.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have a favorite photograph from this exhibition?
Ooh, there are so many that are so beautiful. Well, that star one I mentioned earlier is definitely one of my favorites. But there's also this really interesting older photograph. Something to know about the exhibit is that it covers the full 125 years of the magazine.
Okay.
So there's very contemporary photography, but there's some really great stuff from the very early days of the magazine as well. And there's this photograph of the Oklahoma land rush. So way back in the 1800s,
sure.
And you see these people just surging forward, you know, with their horses and on foot, trying to lay claim to some piece of land to create a home. And I just think that that's such an interesting document of a specific time.
It's something you can't imagine happening today.
No, not at all.
Well, yeah. Maybe in the digital realm, rushing for just the right URL or whatever.
Sharon Gamble with Johanna Bloom of the Idlejorg. You can see National Geographic Greatest Photographs of the American West through February 10th at the museum. And you can learn more about the exhibit, a photography seminar on February 2nd, the photography contest, and the camera giveaway at idlejorg.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll learn what Indiana art and music educators are up to this semester.
I'll chat with the Encore Vocal Arts Ensemble's new music director.
And I'll get a preview of the play Jackie and Me at the IRT. Plus, there'll be our calendar of events we call What Do We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.